big sound in a small town, far away from the big city lights, making music every night. Good music with all our friends. Tell everybody, tell your mama and them. We're going out and we're getting down. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town. A big sound in a small town.
Welcome to Season 4 of Big Sound Small Town. I'm your host, Sandy Carlton. Join me as musicians tell their stories about how they became musicians and the stories along the way.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie Miller here in the Earl Scruggs Center in Shelby, North Carolina. I'm a songwriter from Asheville, came down this foggy, rainy morning to talk to Sandy about songs, all things songwriting.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's a good way to introduce yourself. I take it that songwriting and being a songwriter is what you consider yourself to be more than anything?
Absolutely. Although 99% of the time when I say that, people say, yeah, but what else do you do? Or what do you really do?
Well,
and I've just started saying, I'm a songwriter, like I said the first time.
Yeah.
You want to see my tax return?
Exactly.
What form of verification do you need?
Well, I mean, I'm sure people consider you a vocalist. You're a very fine vocalist also.
Oh, thank you.
So,
thank you.
You know.
But it's all about the song for me. It always has been.
Yeah, well, that's we share that in common. I play a lot of different instruments. But when people ask me what I do, I write songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
so,
were you always, like, how long ago did you start writing songs?
When I was like 12 years old.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, actually, I wanted to be a writer as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be probably Ernest Hemingway. But I also learned really quickly that you can write a song a lot faster than you can write a book.
And you don't have to make nearly as much sense.
You don't. You don't. And you know, also at that time, I think that I had a cousin living in New York who came home at Thanksgiving one time and brought me the Freewheeling Bob Dylan. Changed my life totally.
I bet.
I mean, it was, I thought, yeah, this is what I've always wanted to do, as opposed to, I mean, I was playing like, Michael rode the boat ashore and all that stuff like that, and then writing stuff, not musically. And I thought, oh yeah, this is what I want to do. So
cool.
It kind of changed my life for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I believe
so.
It.
So I like to write. I still write.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a craft? Is it a skill?
Songwriting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, as much as this doesn't set well with some people, I pretty much think it's a talent.
It is a talent.
And I definitely, anybody can do anything and start at the level that they are and get better at it if they work at
True,
it.
True, they can.
But I've always felt like some people have a songwriting gene or whatever it is, and it's not everybody that has that.
I agree with that. And we all have the same choices of words. It's just some people are better at choosing them and putting them with a melody than other people are.
Exactly, yeah.
And you're right. The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's no explaining the day you wake up with a song that there's no reason why you have that song or even that idea.
Right.
It almost writes itself.
Exactly.
So I've never been able to get a handle on that.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I worked at it as a craft, I guess, I could not, some of the stuff that just came to me for no reason worked better than stuff I toiled and labored over.
I think probably a lot of artists would say that, you know, accidental stuff is their best work.
Do you co-write much?
I have not dabbled in the co-writing because, you know, the way I'm doing it is the best. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, well, I understand, sure.
No, I would like to try it, but it would have to be, it's like probably a relationship. If the chemistry is hard, you can't just go find that anywhere.
Oh, you
can't.
It
happens or it doesn't, and, you know.
I know a lot of people that co-write. Co-writing, well, it's always kind of been a, this is my take on co-writing, okay?
You did a lot of that back in Nashville?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
I'm not crazy about it. Here's why I did it, is let's say I have a song. It's a pretty good song, but you know Malcolm. We'll just do that, okay? So, you know, you and I are here, and I say, you know, if you, I'll give you credit if you can change some of these words to make it better if you can get it to Malcolm.
Right, yeah.
And then how that works is really half of something is better than all of nothing.
Right.
And that's kind of the Nashville formula. I mean, you know, it's even the people that go, Charles Humphreys, you know Charles, you know, those guys go and write with people, but the whole deal is to
get the shotgun effect.
Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Which is okay. I just have always had a hard time writing with other people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a guy in Asheville now who went to Nashville when he was 51 and got over 200 songs recorded. And he works at Organic Records now. But
where's that?
It's in Nashville, Arden. But he told me that he's
never. Ty?
No. Yeah, he works for Ty. He's the A&R guy at Ty's Records.
Okay, what's his name?
John Weissenberger.
Oh, okay, I don't know.
He's got a whole bunch of cuts, I mean, just a ton, but he told me he's never written a song.
Dang him.
He's just a song fixer, you know?
So he doesn't go over and just bring the ideas, but he can kind of tweak them and
he can
them.
Fix. Which a lot, I mean, I have, I don't know about you, but I have stacks of stuff that...
Unfinished,
that a guy like that probably could work. If I did not have to probably sit and work with him, I could go, here, John, you know, here's some stuff
right.
I can't finish, you know. And a guy that I play with now, Kevin, sometimes I'll send him something if I think it's a really good song and say I'm stuck.
Yeah, I've had a couple of times somebody not in the process of co-writing, but just maybe at the studio say, hey, what about if you took that part and put it
sure.
in? And it just... the whole song opens up in such a glorious way that, I mean, I know that that can be really a powerful thing.
It can. But like you, I'm not very good to sit down and say, let's write.
Yeah.
Because number one, I don't know if on the spot I can come up with an idea.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And number two, even if I do, I don't really know where I'm going with it.
Right.
And probably, co-writing for me is hard. Some people are great at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
so bad at it, I've never done it. So.
Well, and, you know, and part of it is I spent a large portion of my life with no one to co-write with.
Yeah,
which,
me too.
I mean, you know, so that kind of develops that, and you get used to doing it. So.
Yeah.
So that's a question that you always have to ask, you know. That's another thing, too. Okay, say six people write a song. How much of that do you really feel good about claiming as your own?
Right.
The money in the bank part, I feel good about claiming as my own. But
yeah.
Would I go out and do it? Maybe if I really like the song. But I would be okay having my name on a song that someone recorded that was a hit that I didn't particularly like. I have my own songs I don't particularly like.
Yeah, I mean, I would be okay with that too. You know, because I'm not going to write anything I can't stand behind, even if it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Somebody wants to use it.
I also have songs from earlier in my life that haunt me, that people ask for me to do that I don't really feel.
How are you supposed to be able to remember that?
These days, at my age,
yeah,
I have a hard time remembering the words to my own songs all the time.
Me too, and the chords, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, yeah, I mean, and if I write something new, don't ask me to go perform it anytime soon because
right.
I cannot remember the words.
It takes a while.
And I'm not real good at sitting words out in front of me.
Oh, huh?
You know, I mean, I just don't feel, I don't know. I play with an excellent songwriter, and he has all his words on the
I can't help stand. It. I hate that.
I know. People do.
Put your music stand away.
Yeah.
Or your phone, for God's sake.
I know, yeah, and I see that all the time. So I'll either go out and stumble through the song or I just won't do it.
Yeah, I mean, a chef at a restaurant doesn't have a recipe book.
No.
So.
That's a pretty good way of putting it, yeah. So, did you start at an early age writing?
No, I'm one of these late bloomers. I mean, I always kind of like scribbled things down, but I didn't start playing and writing and singing until I was in my late 20s.
Really?
And I just stumbled into it accidentally.
Yeah, let's talk about that. How did that happen?
I was living in Madison County. I was on a farm, married, totally different life than I was. Wasn't a musician at all. Didn't know I was going to be a musician. And I picked up a friend's guitar at a party or something one time. And I had taken some guitar lessons when I was in third grade because I was laid up. I had both my legs in casts. I couldn't walk. And so my mom got me a guitar to mess around with.
Sure.
And I learned two songs. One of them was classical, and one was like The Wreck of Old 97.
Yeah.
And so when I picked up a guitar again in my 20s, I was kind of picking around trying to find those songs. And my friend Hillary, who's an old-time music player, was like, hey, you know, where'd you learn to play? You know, how'd you learn all that? And she was like, you should apply for this emerging artist grant. She heard me over the ensuing months. I immediately started writing songs.
Right.
I had no idea that was going to happen. And she just kept at me about it. I was like, Hillary, I'm not applying for a grant. I don't even know what I'm doing. But I eventually did apply for and get this grant.
That's cool.
Which was the total, like, linchpin or whatever that word is to make me leave my marriage.
Yeah.
Amicably, thank goodness, you know. I just said, hey, this new thing happened. I had no idea this was coming up. And I can't live, you know, isolated on a 60-acre farm.
Sure.
With cows and all that, if I'm going to go do this. So we split, and then I just immediately moved into Asheville proper, started doing open mics at the Gray Eagle, met Malcolm, got an upright bass, went on the road. Boom, boom, boom. I was still learning Malcolm's songs when I was on stage in New York City at Irving Plaza opening for Merle Haggard.
That's hilarious.
Just gripped, hoping I played the correct root note. Terrifying.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
It is amazing. I feel like I got one of the last, like, kind of rock and roll stories you can get. It's hard to have that story anymore where you just immediately hit the ground running like that.
I've known some people who got late starts, but you got late start and then jumped on it really big.
Yeah, to meet Malcolm and have him as a mentor was a huge part of that.
Did that come when you were doing the emerging artist?
Met him yet.
How did that work? How did the emerging artists, because I know my people like to know, you know, what did you have to do with that?
It's through the North Carolina Arts Council, and right. I don't think they call it Emerging Artist Grant anymore, but there's something, I think. And I made a recording.
Yeah. Oh, you made a recording with
it. A cassette recording.
Okay. Oh, you're aging yourself there.
No doubt.
Still have copies of it?
I didn't until not too long ago. A friend came over and said, look what I found. Brought me one cassette. It's so funny.
I love it when they find mine in a bargain bin somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's funny. So you would go around and sing different places?
Doing open mics.
Open mics.
And met a lot of the people that I still know to this day at some of those early open mics. And met Malcolm at a place where I was doing a gig. And, you know, the fact that he had management and a 4-star review in Rolling Stone.
Right.
We were doing gigs that were amazing. Just so much fun. And he had such a loyal following.
Yeah, he
Most
still
of
does,
our shows
I guess.
Were a lovely, seated audience that was so excited to hear us.
The listening room.
So
almost.
I thought that's how it was. You know?
Yeah.
And then when he and I split up, I was like, oh boy. Now what? No coattails to ride on anymore.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but that did gave you a lot of exposure, didn't it?
So much. And a lot of those early songwriter shows that we did over in Nashville, just meeting all the people over there, and it really was cutting my teeth in a major way. And I'm so grateful because regardless of whatever personal stuff, he was always a huge supporter of what he saw as my talent and just told me, you're a natural born songwriter. This is who you are. And I don't know if I would have known that, really claimed that on my own.
Right.
But when he gave it to me, I took it.
Oh, because he's such a good one. I mean, if he tells you that, why would you not believe it?
And the way that he told me, he said, honey, I'm going to tell you something, that this is what people say in Nashville when they meet somebody that's, you know, whatever, for real. He said, I got bad news. You're a songwriter.
that's true. I mean, the Nashville deal is you play one song for someone, and if they don't say, you got any more, then you don't. You're right. You won't get another one. So it's one of those things that. But what is hard a lot of times is sometimes you. And it looks to me that you do not have this problem. So I had a life before I ever pitched many of my songs. I'd had a lifetime to write them. So I had a bunch. But then when you get there, you have to come up with new stuff. I mean, but you get to do all your new stuff right along with it, which is pretty cool.
That's true. But I mean, I've always been too left of center for Nashville.
Yeah, well.
And I never, ever sat down to write a song thinking about anything really, much less how to make it commercial and get a hit or money. It just was never part of my formula.
What actually do you call your music?
I mean, honestly, I call myself a folk star.
Well, that works.
Instead of rock star.
Yeah, that works.
But you know, I mean, you could call it folk. I don't love the term Americana, but I use it sometimes. Because I don't know what to call my music. It's got a lot of influences.
I call mine rural alternative.
All right.
but I mean,
I like that.
You know, it's certainly not country, but
right, yeah.
But it's probably not bluegrass or I don't know. Folk's kind of big again, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, folk is kind of making a comeback.
Oh, big time, yeah. But they call it Americana.
They do to a degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing this show on Wednesday in Asheville. It's called Open Folk. Have you heard that term? Uh-uh. I don't really understand it yet. I probably won't until I get there and do it. But it's this concept that's done in a couple of other venues in a couple of other parts of the world. And now they're doing it in Asheville, too. And it's a very strictly enforced listening room environment.
I like that.
There's a changing venue, but this open folk show is kind of like the moth, I guess, where there's other areas where they're doing it. And I guess it's catching on in Asheville. So I'm going to go do that on Wednesday and see what that's all about.
Well, you know,
but it's cool to have the name folk on a show.
It is.
You're right. People are just sort of embracing that.
Yeah,
you know?
They are again. So, and of course, there's nothing like listening rooms. I mean, sometimes I've changed up words to my songs in busy places and even said some really nasty stuff in them just to see if anybody was listening.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Fortunately, they weren't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So, I mean, it is hard. It is hard being a songwriter. It is hard being a solo performer, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because you're out there by yourself with some stuff that really means a lot to you and personal. I tell people all the time, I can stand in front of you naked, but I don't think I can do a new song, you know, I can do it in front of strangers, but people I care about,
mm-hmm.
I hate to do that.
That's so funny you mentioned standing naked, because when you were talking about what it's like to play solo, I was thinking, it's like one of those dreams where you went to school and you forgot to wear your pants or something.
Yeah, it is.
You really are hanging out there in the breeze.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to make mistakes and there's nobody to cover them up.
Sure.
So.
And you're blessed, but in my case, my voice is no longer as good as it was, and it was never that great. So, you know, I know my songs are good, but I have the little intimidation of my voice.
Well, I do too. I mean, I think everybody, you know, there's always a million better,
no matter
what your level.
And
people seem like the world is kind of a volume contest a lot of times. And I don't have one of those big belty voices.
Yeah, I don't either.
And so, you know, whenever there's somebody up there just belting a song out, people respond to it so much. But if you're not doing that, it's, I guess, harder for them to hook into what you're doing. So I just had to just drop all desire for anybody to receive it in any certain way over the years.
I think that's a pretty good philosophy.
And because I played so many restaurants and bars, and I got to where I could show up and play in a crowded room of people who really weren't listening and just pretend I was one of the diners, you know, just do my own thing and sort of be in the background and not really talk very much.
Yeah.
And people would say, well, thank you for that, was lovely
in
the background. So I got to where I just didn't take it personal. And not that I want to keep doing that kind of gig.
It's
very gratifying to play for a listening audience.
Oh, those are wonderful. And few and far between.
Indeed.
We actually have a place here in town that works well like that.
Not this one
across the street, Dragonfly.
Mm-hmm.
It works well. People listen there.
Yeah, that's cool.
So those, there are not many of them around, though, really.
No.
I mean, but yeah, it's hard to play in places like that.
It is.
So after you left Malcolm, what did you do?
Well.
I mean, I know that had to be like, I got to start over kind of again.
I started over, yeah. And just kept doing the same thing, but at a different level, you know.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, once I started doing this, I never stopped. And I waited a lot of tables along the way and did other things, but it just never entered my mind to stop doing it.
Well, I mean, obviously someone's had an interest in recording. You have how many records?
Maybe 7 or something like that.
I mean, so you haven't had...
Well, that was my interest, though. I mean, I did all that, you know?
Yeah.
This last one that I did is on a label, but before that it was all just me
getting
money, getting to the studio.
Yeah, you have to do that,
too. Try to do another project, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to do that to be able to work. You have to do that to be able to work yourself up to a label.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that you do have to do.
Yeah.
And if you take too much time off, you have to redo it all over again.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I have these buddies that play in Acoustic Syndicate, and they took some time off to raise their kids, and, you know, they had to, when they went back, they had to work on getting a new project.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're on Ty's label now, so.
Oh, they are?
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So that is really good.
Yeah, those boys been around for a long
time. Yeah, they have. Mm-hmm. They kind of, everybody's really hot on the Avett Brothers, and my Avett Brothers told me that they pattern their stuff after Acoustic Syndicate, but, you know, that whole time frame there, how I found out about you is through
Crackle.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's so, my buddy.
So, Jason, I knew back from our Green Acres days when he played in like 12 bands.
Mm-hmm. Larry Hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Still plays in like 12 bands, but yeah. But that was a different time. It was good. That was kind of amazing time in this area for music.
It was. I felt like my timing of coming out of the songwriter in Asheville was real good.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. And, you know, you still play upright bass?
I'm not playing with anybody right now, but I have a bass. And, you know, if I meet somebody and they say, hey, come play some bass or whatever, I'm open to it.
Yeah, I didn't know. I mean, I know that's just a small part of it, but
I really love accompanying people, and I especially love singing harmonies with people, and the bass is kind of my vehicle to get to sing harmonies with people a lot of times.
Well, you know, that's another thing too. I have a big respect for, admiration of, and one of my favorite things is harmony singers.
People take it for granted.
Oh, they do.
It's a real thing.
It is a real thing.
Announcement, PSA.
Yeah.
Harmony singing is a real thing.
And more difficult than you think it is.
Right.
I'm okay as long as I can hear.
Yeah.
If I play with guys that are really good and never drift, even if they can't hear. Mm-hmm. But I can drift if I can't hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You know, and also sometimes I pick a strange one that probably I should have picked a different one.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, me too.
But
I have so many people tell me, like, God, Valerie, you're so hard on people about whatever, about harmonies. I'm like, no, I just want it done correctly. Is that being hard on somebody?
No. You want to separate bands or acts. How I really separate them is by their harmony singing, because there is a real difference. And, I mean, some fields like bluegrass are full of harmony singing. You expect that. But I see a lot of bands, and they have their one singer and no harmony singing. And it just loses something for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, it's fun when everybody's doing a bunch of stuff, in a band.
It is. Or big, large bands like, when Jason had
Firecracker.
Yeah, Firecracker. Well, yeah, Firecracker.
They've got a roster.
Yeah, they do. And I guess maybe even when he goes back, when he had Snake Oil.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge band of,
that was.
Of interchangeable pieces, kind of.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I like stuff like that. You know, I have a thing that I put together where we just bring in people. There's no rehearsal, and we play, and they're all good musicians, so they know what to do. But
mm-hmm.
you know, it's a lot of fun. But some people that are good musicians are scared to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But
there's a lot of different ways to be a good musician.
There is a lot. Yeah, knowing when not to play is a really good one too.
Restraint.
Yeah, I mean.
That might be one of those, you're either born with it or not.
Well, it could be, because I know a lot of people who can play really, really well.
Yeah.
That play every note they can play. I'm actually working with a 17-year-old prodigy on the pedal steel.
Cool.
He's already got an endorsement from two pedal steel companies. The boy is fabulous.
That's amazing.
And he, but he needs to learn. If you're listening, Silas, I'm aiming this at you, buddy. You know, you can't play every note you know on every song.
Would say, you ain't getting paid by the note.
Yeah, yeah, and I think he would be right about that. I mean, I think it's more sometimes what you don't play.
Yeah.
Or maybe when you get your chance to play, make what you do amazing, but you don't have to play all the time.
Well, and to connect with the feeling of what you're doing instead of being a technician.
Yeah. Yeah, there's tons of them. I mean, way better than I could ever play, but I don't. They're just playing. And a lot of young players are that way, and they work it out. Most of them work it out. They're young. They want to play everything they know, make an impression.
Right.
And the ones that last and make it finally learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so. What do you have going in the future?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball, so I'm just kidding.
But I mean, you have stuff lined up?
I do. I've got this thing on Wednesday, and then I'm playing in Charleston a little later in the month at a songwriter gig down there. I don't have a ton of gigs, to be honest with you, because like we were saying, I think before we started recording, I'm trying to find the gigs I do want to do.
Right.
And not just put a bunch of stuff on the calendar just so it's going to be there.
Right.
And I'm lucky to be able to do that right now in my life. So, I don't have a ton of stuff.
No, I mean, that's good, too, because things are so unsure. Gas prices are really high.
Yeah.
The cost of going out and playing is you know, and I don't see anybody giving musicians raises.
Right.
A good job has always been about the same good job.
Exactly.
You know, most places don't have a musician union, so.
No, I haven't noticed that.
And Nashville has a musicians union.
Right.
But then they all play places that honor the union. But I mean, most places, somebody's always there to play cheaper than you are.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
So, which hurts. Hurts, you know, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
Did COVID affect you as far as playing dates and stuff?
Simply did not play during COVID. Yeah, I stayed in my cabin in the woods.
Yeah, that's nothing wrong with that. I did the same.
I'm still trying to come back out of that shell, honestly. I got real used to just sort of retracting and being in my shell.
I just went off with some musicians Labor Day weekend. And everyone but me caught COVID.
Oh, my gosh. How did you not?
I tested for... I have a theory. I drink a drink called Sun Drop.
Uh-huh.
I don't know anyone with O-positive blood who drank Sun Drop that's ever had COVID.
That is nuts.
It is totally nuts.
But Sun Drop does have that... radioactive
green
color. Maybe it just sort of sterilized your insides or something.
You know, I don't know, but everyone had it but me, and I tested every day.
Wow.
For a week.
Is everybody okay though?
Yeah, they're okay.
That's good.
Oh, they'd all been vaccinated, so their symptoms were mild.
Mm-hmm. But were you at like a big? Were you at an indoor venue? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, I was in a hot tub with everybody.
Wow, I didn't catch it.
Uh-uh.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
Good job. You need a Sun Drop endorsement.
I do. I had a song about Sun Drop, and I know the people that have the place, and I was going to pitch it to them, but there's another guy here in town who has a band, Dirty Grass Soul, and they're kind of a... they've got it going on. They have a big following, and Kevin has a Sun Drop song, and he beat me to the punch. He's a great guy, though. I like him. I like his band. He has a lot of original music, and he's trying to. There's actually two people here in town who are trying their best to avoid ever going to Nashville, but still sell enough records to make a living at it.
So they spend all their time on the computer with people in Nashville?
One of them has an agent.
I mean, they're dealing with Nashville, even if they're not there.
They are.
Yeah.
They are.
So they're remotely moved to Nashville.
They
basically.
Are. They have.
Yeah. But staying home is, there's a value to that.
Sure.
Quality of life wise, for sure.
And they finally decided to up their, you know, they're traveling farther and farther these days. And the other is an individual songwriter, singer-songwriter, and he calls himself Pistol Hill. He's a country act, and he does the live out of car thing, which is a tough way to go.
Oh, yeah.
He's young. He got him a school bus, and I thought he was going to take him a band out with him, but he realized that couldn't make enough money doing that, so.
Scraps, I tell you.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard these days to be a musician.
It always was, but now it just seems even harder to me.
And it's easier to live in a van with three other people when you're 20 than it is when you're not 20, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, do you know Brooke and Darren Aldridge? Well, she's the four-time IBMA bluegrass singer, and she lives here.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder sometimes how they, you know, how tough it is. They played the Opry, Grand Ole Opry now like over 50 times.
Wow.
But, you know, they have a band, but I think they travel in a van everywhere they go. That would be tough.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have children, though, so that makes it easier, I guess.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
What else we need to know?
Oh, well, I guess we'll talk a little bit about the new record.
Yeah, let's do.
Which was released just in May, and which I put out on a record label out in LA called Blackbird Record Label. Wonderful, wonderful group out there that's been collaborating with me on the whole release and just sort of taking my release to another level that I'd never been at before. So that's been really great.
Where did you record that at?
In Asheville. Mm-hmm. Right before COVID.
Yeah.
I was in this new studio and with a killer female engineer producer.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was playing upright bass on my friend's record, and I was so just relaxed and enjoying the vibe of the studio that when we finished her record, I said, can I just stay? So I wasn't even planning on making a record, but I just wanted to stay there, and the record just kind of like came out of me and fell into place like that. And then COVID happened, and I put it on the back burner. And then I waited and waited, and finally I was like, well, I guess I'll just release this record by the seat of my pants like I always do. And my friend, who had lived in L.A. for a long time, said, just wait on that. Let me share this record with some people I know. And about a week later, he came back to me and said, they want to do your release.
Yeah, that's great.
That was great. So the new record is called Only the Killer Would Know. And it's not strictly a concept record, but it does have a running theme that was inspired by my experience of buying land and living next to a military hazardous waste site. And just getting to know a lot about all of that through the experience.
Yeah, it was kind of you've performed the title cut already.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking that it was kind of a dark song.
Well, that place is very dark. It's called the Chemtronics plant. That's what it was called. And they manufactured chemicals for warfare, including an experimental hallucinogenic decapacitating agent known as BZ, aka Agent Buzz.
Wow.
Which just has all kinds of folklore and just weird secrecy enshrouding it.
Yeah,
and
I can look that up. That's cool.
You know, just the whole experience. Didn't come out till much later in my songwriting, but that's like it does sometimes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's,
bubbles back up or whatever.
Did you use local people on your record?
I did, yeah. And Kayla Zuskin, who is the producer engineer that I worked with, she's about 20-something years younger than me, and she kind of was my liaison to a whole new crop of young, really talented, very professional people in Asheville. So a lot of the people that played on the record were her friends. It just came in and just nailed it.
Yeah, this is great.
And then we're both multi-instrumentalists, so there wasn't a huge cast of characters on the record. But
Because you could play some of it yourself,
right,
which helps. Yeah.
So we had a great time making the record.
That's great. So how do you do studio airplay these days?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you don't push it out to radio, do you?
I hired a guy near Nashville to do a radio campaign.
Okay.
I think I'm charting on the Americana chart
right
now. That's good.
I mean, you kind of have to do that.
Got to get it on some radio.
Yeah, you do.
That's just old school. That's what you do. I mean, so funny that you still have to send a CD.
You do.
Because they're glorified drink coasters, basically.
Well, you know, that's funny. I see a lot of young people, and I say, well, you know, do you have CDs? And they say, no. You know, people my age stream everything, so I don't carry CDs out.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you realize you're missing some money that you could make? And he said, not from my crowd.
Right.
You know, he said, I'm not missing any. He said, it would cost me money to make CDs and take them with me because no one would buy them. Or maybe some old people. That's what they would always, you know, that's what they say. Huh?
I got my oil changed this morning before I came down here, and I gave the guy a few bucks in a CD.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, I think my dad has a thing that'll play this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
They're kind of like business cards anymore.
Yeah, kind of they are. But radio still seems to be interested in them.
I played at WNCW a few weeks ago, and after the taping, we went back in the catacombs and with their massive archives of CD, and I asked Martin, like, how many times do you put a CD on and it starts to skip? He was like, oh, yeah, that just happened about an hour ago.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I mean, it never was a very good technology.
True.
Statistics-wise.
It's true.
If you look at them wrong, they skip.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
So I don't know how all these radio stations are not just saying, send me a link, but...
I know, and I don't understand why, too, because the ones with the... with all the new equipment, it would be, you know, the sound technology... I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're against MP3s a bit. Maybe they think the quality's not good enough, but...
It's a mystery to me.
Maybe
because all the radio stations are just full of old people like me.
Well, it could be. Like me. I know all those people at WNCW. They're old. Martin might even be one of the young ones.
Yeah, he looked.
But it is good. You know, going WNCW is good for singer-songwriters, for musicians in this area.
Definitely.
That's a worthy outfit up there.
They've been playing my music since 99.
Yeah, I mean, they're good people.
Mm-hmm.
I know almost all of them. Great radio station.
It is.
And one of the cool things that you ever get to do is Studio B.
Totally.
I mean,
is that the station that most people around here listen to?
Yeah. There's a college radio station out of Gastonia that is good too, and they play local stuff too. So
what's their
WSGE 91.7. They're good. They play local stuff too. So you might want to.
What's the venue over there that the people playing
at
these days?
It's Gaston. That's Gaston College Radio, but.
The Rhodey, isn't that a Gastonia?
It's gone. Rhodey's gone.
Yeah. And then Rose Meeks had that place, that wine shop thing for a
minute. Yeah, it's
gone. Too.
Gastonia struggles to keep places to play. Here today and gone tomorrow.
I mean, yeah.
Craft breweries have taken over as the places to play these days.
I know.
Seems every town has one.
Well, can I just put out a general request
sure,
to
yeah.
all breweries?
Yeah.
Can we have better lighting, please? Does it have to be like an interrogation room with the bright light shining? Like, why do people who drink beer need such bright light? I look so much cuter in the dark.
That's funny. That's so funny. My spiel with craft breweries is if you have a good beer, why do you get rid of it and make something new next week?
Right.
You know, I really like that beer. Well, we don't have it anymore.
Create a feeding frenzy. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. But it is, there are, you know, a lot of them, and it is a chance to play and play early. Oh, that's another thing, too.
Early, yeah. Early's good.
Early's good.
I like playing breweries a lot of times. It's just the lighting is consistently bright, and I just love low lighting in an old ivy kind of bar.
And it varies, too, with... some have somewhat listening, and
mm-hmm. Most not.
I mean,
have a lot of children and dogs.
They do, a lot of children and dogs. Yes, Asheville, or Brevard, or Hendersonville.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that whole area. Mm. Yeah, you're right, they do. Which is, sometimes I can't play my songs in those places, too.
I know.
I have to, I don't change words, I just don't do them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yep.
I'm not even going there.
Oh, play a happy song. Oh, I will when I write one.
This Kevin Bridges is a guy I play with. He's a really fine songwriter, and he is the king. He tells me that one of these days I'll write a happy song, you know. Has a lot of murder ballads, too.
Uh-huh.
So.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, I mean, he's the king of them. You know, I think being his wife or his girlfriend would worry me that whether he's going to do me in at some point.
Well, if he's writing about it, maybe that's his outlet.
Yeah, I think
for all
it
the
is.
Murderous impulses.
Yeah, he's had the same wife forever, so I guess she's not too worried
she's
about
survived.
It.
She
survived. Yeah, yeah, he's the one probably she'd worry. but what else?
Oh, what else? I don't know.
Did you grow up in North Carolina?
Durham.
Durham.
Born and raised in Durham.
Wow.
Been in Asheville since the mid-90s. Mm. Were you born and raised here?
No.
Here?
No. But I've lived here a long time now.
Where are you from?
I lived everywhere growing up. I was born in a house, actually, in a little town in South Carolina called Winnsboro, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But then we moved a bunch as a child.
Military stuff?
No. My dad was in the textile industry.
Mm.
And
I didn't know that was a moving around kind of thing.
It was. He was, golly gee. My dad in was the guy who put polyester into clothing.
Whoa.
So he had.
Do you have a patent or something?
Yeah, well, he doesn't. Uniroyal had it. But, my dad went to work in the mill when he was like 12 years old.
Wow.
And wound up with a PhD in textile engineering.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, yeah, it's a pretty good story. He was a jerk, but I mean, we moved a lot because he, everything he touched seemed to explode and do well, so we moved on to another place.
Oh, we're on the increase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he just kept getting, you know, better offers and better offers. So we'd move here and move there,
mm-hmm.
which kind of stinks.
Yeah.
Gives you a lot to write about, though.
Yep. And, you see a lot of stuff.
You do. Mm-hmm. You do. So, but I've been in North Carolina a long time now. And I've lived in Shelby now. I don't know, maybe close to 40 something years.
So it was your dad's profession that also brought you to Shelby?
No.
A woman.
Yep.
I knew it.
Yep, that's what happens. Yes, it is.
As soon as you're old enough to decide on your own where you're moving, a lot of times it has to do with chasing somebody.
Yes, it does. And, you know, I will tell you that this is a great little town to live in.
I've heard that from other people.
Tickle, there's a lot of music here.
Mm-hmm.
I raised a family here that I'm a lucky person.
Cool.
And I still get to play music at a very advanced age. So, you know, I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like to say blessed because.
I know.
I think it's more luck.
Right.
You know.
Well, if one person's blessed, every person.
Yeah, you know, and you put me on the spot, but I don't think God likes me enough to bless me. No, I haven't been the best person in the world my whole entire life. So,
well, who has?
I don't know. There's a lot of people think they have been.
Right, that's true.
So, but I am a lucky person. Plus, I get to do this too, mm-hmm. and meet people like you, mm-hmm. which is really, really.
You are really lucky to meet.
I am. You just do not know the joy that it brings me to meet other musicians. Musicians I don't know. Musicians are fun.
Mm-hmm. And back at you, we musicians crave an experience like this. Come to this cool, awesome building, sure. sit down and talk about songs.
This just happened by accident. I interviewed a musician, a guy named Jackson Martin. Good musician. His dad's a fabulous musician who I can't get to do the show.
You interviewed him for this or before you were doing this?
I interviewed him for this show, but at that point I had no real place to do it. I did it in school buses, cars, bars, people's houses. But then he said, you need to meet my wife. Her name is Mary Beth Martin, and she's just became the executive director of the Earl Scruggs Center. So I did. And she did an interview, and she and I hit it off really, really well. And she said,
"Let's." Hence the lovely
exactly.
corner office.
Yes,
I love this room.
So she said, "Let's partner up." And I said, "That's cool. A deal." And we're really close friends to this day. And
how long have you been doing this podcast?
This is the fourth season.
Cool.
So, cool. So I'd like to get 5 seasons out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a lot of people. There's a lot of musicians.
Do you approach most people, or do you get approached?
Oh, God, I get approached all the time.
You get inundated.
There's a difference if I reach out to you than if you reach out to me.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's not saying that wonderful people have not reached out to me that I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
And I ask other musicians, you know, who do you know, who do you think,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, in your case.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
thanks, Jason.
Jason Kreckel. You know, Jason reached out. So, I think that Charles Humphrey sent me a very good list of people. So, and I try to cover all music. I'm in the Earl Scruggs Center, so yeah, I do a good bit of bluegrass.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had people that play anything you can think of on here.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them even well know. It's a joke. But it's there's still a lot. There was a guy who I did not know, and he contacted me, and I was, you know, and then a buddy of mine saw him playing, and he was playing outside of a concert, and he said, "Man, you gotta find this guy," and it happened to be the guy that hit me up. Guy's name's Jeff Wall. Here's a shout out to you, Jeff. Jeff calls himself the Big Dumb Hick. He's 6'7", and he writes songs. And he is a really good songwriter, and he's hilarious. He's a comedian / songwriter.
Cool.
And his songs are good. And he just played here in town this past weekend for the first time. He's in the Durham area.
Okay.
And he turned out to be a fun guy, an excellent songwriter, and he was fun to have on the show.
Good find.
So it happens. I mean, people reach out, and and they turn out to be great.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't.
Yeah.
but generally, I will say that if I've reached out to you, no one has disappointed me.
Right. Yeah.
There was a reason I did that. There was something that I felt that was story worthy.
Yeah.
And you just fill that bill very well.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time and coming to do this.
Of course. I love doing stuff like this.
Good. Well, I'll try to get you down for the songwriter.
Try.
I will. Okay, there's no try. I will. I promise you I will.
Thank you. Awesome.
All right. Thanks for coming.
Swollen river, flowing twice your normal size. Please deliver every single tear I cry to counted the crops of a farmer, a bucket in a well, the flames of a wildfire, rain them on hell, or what's the reason that they fall from my eyes? Is it all for nothing when I cry? Oh, is it all for nothing when I cry? Said the river, flowing twice its normal size, I will deliver every single tear you cry to the lips of the thirsty, the drought of the land, the homes of the poison in Flint, Michigan. That's the reason that they fall from your eyes. No, it's not for nothing when you cry. Oh, it's not for nothing when you cry. Little hummingbird, all the lightning in your wings could I borrow? 'Cause my heart skips a beat when a man has a temper, when comes a thunderstorm, when a child has to suffer just for being born. If it's beating, is my heart blessed or all for nothing in my chest? Oh, is it all for nothing in my chest? Said the hummingbird, yes, the lightning in my wings you can borrow when your heart skips a beat. If it stops because it cannot contain all the conundrums unexplained, if it's beaten, then your heart is not for nothing in your chest. Oh, it's not for nothing.